Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Okay, Jim Potts back on the air. Thank you for sharing your Sunday with me. Well, today is what we're going to do is we're going to finish up just a little tiny pinch there on the Second Amendment. Just a brief thing that I wanted to go over about one of the cases, original cases on this very quickly. And then we're going to be talking about cybersecurity for the workplace. Then we're going to be talking about some history on these school shootings because of an email that I got and talk to you about that. But before we get started, I have to tell you, did you hear about the road rage incident in Washington, D.C.? A woman turns around, and I guess is what she ended up doing was smashing a Greyhound bus window, and she even rams the driver. And, you know, apparently is what happened was it started a little bit before that. You know, the violent outburst apparently from this woman, she attempted to illegally pass this Greyhound bus that was traveling in Washington, D.C. Now, as she was attempting to pass the bus, she sideswiped another car. And when the driver of that car tried to make contact with her at a red light, the woman grew irate and broke into a verbal argument, according to what the police said later. Now, afterwards, I guess, the bus driver told the woman, "You're a crazy driver. You need to get off the road." The woman then retrieves a wooden baseball bat from the trunk of her car and began hitting the bus, cracking the windshield. Then, I guess she wasn't satisfied, so she pulled out a silver car jack and began smashing the windows. Then, I guess the bus driver got out of the vehicle and stood in front of the woman's car trying to call 911. Well, if you look on the video, and this is actually on video, the woman repeatedly ramming the bus driver with her car. At one point, he was thrown from the hood of a car because he ended up on top of the car, the hood of the car, and got tumbled into the intersection. I mean, you can all see this on the video. He ended up getting a lot of bruises and scratches on his left elbow, apparently. And now, of course, he's got pains on his left side of his hip. And the woman, of course, if you look at the video, the woman drove off. Well, they eventually caught her. She got arrested. She was 20 years old. Mariana Silva is her name. But I got to tell you, if you recall, with some of you from my training that I've done with the active shooter training, I've talked about road rage. And on the air here, I think about two or three episodes ago, I also talked about road rage. And if you remember what kind of car I said was one of the kinds of cars with road rage, do you remember? I told you Audi. And guess what? What is she driving? She's driving an Audi. In addition to that, I mentioned the color of cars. I mentioned three or four different colors. One of the colors I mentioned was silver. What color car was her Audi? Silver. Hey, what can I tell you? Some of these statistics actually come true. So here's a woman, road rage. She did what she did, and now she's being held for apparently attempted murder or assault with a deadly weapon, meaning the vehicle. So now she's in big time trouble, quite frankly. At any rate, well, that's that. But I had to mention that because when I talk about these things on the air sometimes, and I talked about this road rage and the color of cars and the things of that nature, you look at it and say, is that true? Well, here's where it held be kind of positive that it happened. So let's keep moving on. Watch out for those silver Audis, the blue BMWs, the Land Rovers, the black cars. I don't know. Anyway, let's move on. Hey, I want to tell you about a email that I received. She says, "Dear Jim, school shootings, arming teachers, and now people training the kids to kill. I am curious, do you have any information on how far back school shootings are?" Alicia from Oregon. Alicia, yeah, I do. I'm actually going to cover that after I cover a couple of other things. I did some research for it on there for you, so I'll come back to you. Here's another one. Jim, I just wanted to say my family and I listen to your show every week and find it informative and easy to understand. Thanks and keep going. We need this information. Tommy and Teresa, Jacksonville. Third one. Jim, a few years ago, I remember an incident that involved animal rights activists. Can you talk about that on one of your shows? Paula from Santa Monica. Paula, I will definitely do that. I will probably try to do that next week or the week after. There's a lot of issues regarding animal rights. People don't realize that some of these activist groups like this do get involved with the domestic terrorism. So, yes, I promise you I will cover that for you. Okay, let's get back and finalize this little piece on the Second Amendment. You know, from an overall perspective, the United States Supreme Court has addressed this issue on handgun possession, and they've also addressed it in the home. And they specifically said that possession of handguns in the home does not violate the Second Amendment. And, you know, I don't think there's big news, you know, about that. But when they talk about it, they say any lawful firearm in the home operable for the purpose of immediate self-defense is okay. Now, you know, they also held that the Second Amendment protects an individual's right to possess a firearm unconnected with the service, because if you remember right from the definition of it, had to do with the militia, and to use that arm for traditionally lawful purposes such as self-defense within the home is what they said. So I wanted to share with you at least how far back this issue goes in terms of the United States Supreme Court. So let's go back in history a little bit. Believe it or not, the first case, 1876, this was the first case in which the Supreme Court had the opportunity to interpret the Second Amendment. And the court recognized that the right of the people to keep and bear arms was a right which existed prior to the Constitution, when it stated that such a right is not a right granted by the Constitution. Neither is it in any manner dependent upon that Constitution for its existence, which I thought was very interesting. But that's their holding. If any of you want to read that case, it's United States versus Cruikshank, Cruishank. So now I will tell you, in a subsequent case in 1886, court affirmed that the holding in that case, standing alone, applied only the action by the federal government. But it nonetheless found that the states without power to infringe upon the right to keep and bear arms, holding that the states cannot, even laying constitutional provision in question of you, prohibit people from keeping and bearing arms. So here we go. The Supreme Court way back in 1886 said that the states can't stop us. Now, I will tell you that the Second Amendment, the court suggested the Second Amendment does apply to the states through the 14th Amendment, and thus a state cannot forbid individuals to keep and bear arms. So let me also give you the phone number in case you have any questions that you'd like to call in to the show. It's 818-602-4929. Again, that's 818-602-4929. Or you can always email us at listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. All right. So I think that kind of wraps up the Second Amendment. I think that the last couple of weeks we've dealt with it. And if anybody still wants to call in, I'm always glad to get calls for sure. And having said that, I hope that the information that I provided to you over the last couple of weeks with this was helpful, because it is an issue that really is a major issue that keeps going and going and going. So let's see here. Well, it looked like I had a caller, but I'm not sure. It looks like it disappeared, so I'm not sure.
No, I'm here. I'm here.
Oh, here you are. Okay.
Oh, there you go.
All right. Okay. Hi, I'm on the air with Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. Do you have a question or comment to share?
This is Jim from New Jersey. And I just want to clear up a misconception that that supporters of the Second Amendment seem to have regarding gun control. Like, I'm in favor of stricter gun control. And the misconception is that the people in favor of gun control want to take away all their guns. And that's such a misconception. We don't care how many handguns and how many shotguns they own. The main concern with gun control is being able to purchase anything and without any background checks, like a gun show, that type of thing. Stricter control regarding background check, so you don't get the crazies that get these guns. Now, the problem is the semi-automatic assault weapons. That's what most gun control advocates are looking to ban, and people don't realize that the AR-15 is the choice of mass shooters everywhere. I mean, look at all the mass shootings we've had in the last several years. How many of those use the AR-15? Because they're made to kill as many people as possible in the shortest amount of time. Now, people will say they have to adapt that to have to defend themselves in their home from home invasion. Well, you know, if you can't defend your home with a handgun or a shotgun, then you shouldn't own guns because clearly you don't know how to use them. So it's not that we want to take away all guns. We just want to keep the military-style ones, the ones that are used in mass shootings, out of the hands of crazies. Yes, criminals will get those guns if they criminals always get guns if they want to get guns. But it's not the criminals that are doing the mass shootings. It's the people that are mentally disturbed, who you know, somehow get through background checks or don't use background checks, whatever. They get a hold of these things, and that's where the problem is.
Well, first of all, I don't disagree with you on the issue of, first of all, as a homeowner, I don't know why anybody would want something like an AR-15. I mean, that thing could probably go through the walls and go out and hit somebody else and the rest of it. And I agree with you, a more conservative approach for a home defense would be a handgun, in my opinion, shotguns. I was speaking to a friend of mine the other day. Actually, they were a client. I was in Miami doing active shooter training this week, and he was telling me that he just ordered a 410 and over and under for home defense. Now, for those of you that don't know what a 410 is, it's a shotgun. Shotguns come in 410, 20 gauge, and 12 gauge, but a 410 is the lightest of the two, of the three. And you know, I thought that was interesting because what he was telling me was that particular shotgun, you know, up close is going to be, you know, just as deadly as any other kind. I mean, in terms of the shotgun. So home defense, I don't disagree with you. I don't believe that the AR-15 or any of those types of weapons should be in the hand of civilians. But I also agree with you in the fact that the criminals, you know, these mass shootings generally, I mean, I guess they turn into criminals because of the fact that they shoot and kill people. But at the outset, I don't see from any statistics that these are, you know, your actual criminals, your normal thieves and things like that are creating these mass shootings. I don't disagree with that at all. But, you know, the problem is that how do you start drawing the line with some of this? Because the realities are when you start talking about gun control, the average citizen is going to look at this, in my opinion, Jim, with any kind of weapon. I mean, statistically speaking, if you go back, a lot of these things that are still done, they're not all with these automatic weapons. That's really just within the last few years. I mean, how long have these been around? I mean, think about it. When you had the situation when you have the situation with some of these school shootings, and I'm going to be talking about some statistics with school shootings as one of the segments today, and I'm telling you, the information is shocking. So I don't disagree with what you're saying. It sounds like you are. I'm sorry, you said you are a gun control person, correct? You believe in gun control.
Yes, definitely.
Well, let me ask you a question: have you ever written to your senators and your congressmen, and have you? I mean, have you put that foot forward?
Well, you know, with Congress, you know, many of them are in the pockets of the NRA, and both from both parties too. And you have to pick and choose who you write to, because you're writing to somebody who gets donations from the NRA. They're not gonna be in favor of any kind of gun control. You know, we're talking about and something. Most people are in favor of universal background checks. That's gun control, but it's also probably the most effective kind of gun control, really.
But wait a minute. When you say background checks are fine, but let's just take the shooter in Las Vegas. I mean, if you talk about that, his background check didn't develop. I mean, he had what, 47 guns, something like that.
Yeah, well, maybe.
A lot of them. So I don't know. Think about it. The background check, Jim, is going to come through for criminals. That goes back to the same thing. You know, an upstanding guy that's never had an issue with the law and they run a background check on him, hey, it's going to come back clean. He's going to be able to buy that weapon that you're talking about.
And also, along with universal background checks, if they would ban these semi-automatic weapons, you know, talk about statistics. If you could find the statistics, I understand when we had an assault weapons ban in effect, and Congress let it expire, I think I'm not sure the year. It might be 2004 or something like that. But the years that the ban was in effect, my understanding is that mass shootings were way down.
Okay, when we start talking about mass shootings, though, Jim, let's understand historically mass shootings have been long before any of these assault weapons were around. Mass killings, mass shootings, I mean, I could give you statistics going back, you know, to, you know, the 1800s, okay? Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying that, look, if somebody is really off the deep end, they're going to find a way to do it. I mean, there's been bombings. There's all of that. These people are still going to be able to achieve their goal. The assault weapons, I will agree with you, makes it a little bit easier for some of these individuals. But if they really want to do harm that we're talking about, Jim, the Boston Marathon, how many people got killed? There was no assault weapons involved with that. And that was mass killings.
No, that's true, but
you know.
They didn't have the frequency. Look at the frequency now of the mass shootings in the last several years. What is it? Every other month we have one.
Well, I've actually got a lot of statistics on that as well. You know, and I'm going to tell you something. I don't want to get off on a tangent talking about the media, but the media, in my opinion, doesn't help because sometimes I think some of the stuff gets, excuse the expression, I'm groping with my words here, but they go over the top with some of the information. Sensationalizing. Mm-hmm. That's the word I'm looking for. Okay. And, you know, if it bleeds, it reads. I mean, it's just that simple. And, you know, when you make this stuff more known to people out there, now look, it's the media, it's the internet now. You can't really stop some of this, you know, in terms of the information is getting out there. But I think that kind of stuff gives people ideas. I really honestly do. When I give the statistics on the school shootings, it's going to surprise you. I guarantee you it's going to surprise you because, you know, these people are looking at this, you know, as something more recent and everything. It goes back so much further than that, to make a long story short. But at any rate, well, look, I do appreciate the fact that you called in on this. I think that's a great way for me to end on the discussion I've had over the last couple of weeks on the Second Amendment. I do appreciate it. Last week, one lady was talking about, you know, the guns in terms of the bullets. You know, one of the things that they are doing, Jim, is like in California, I think I mentioned it last week, that they actually are registering now or getting ready to start registering for you to buy ammunition, as an example. So, yeah. You know, they'll know.
Well, that's true, because if you know, that's a great idea, because, you know, you... guns without bullets is about as useless as a toilet without a handle.
That's right. That's exactly right. So I don't disagree with that at all. So, you know, I was personally against that, but, you know, it, once again, it's, you know, you're denying some of the basics that we have certain rights. And I'm not just talking about the Second Amendment at this point. I mean, how do you stop us from, you know, as a hunter, I want to go hunting. Well, just because I have to register what kind of bullets I'm using to go hunting might not be a big deal. But, Jim, our government over the years have shown, you know, with their pattern, that once you open the door doing one thing, it then opens up a door to a whole lot of things. And I think that's the problem. When you start registering that you have to buy this, you know, that you're buying a certain kind of bullet, you know, is Big Brother next going to say, okay, because this is registered, and we know you own a 30-06, and now we start rounding up the 30-06s because we know you own a 30-06. I don't know if it'll get to that point or not, but who knows? Who knows
the
time?
But Jim, that's an old argument that it's a slippery slope. Once you start registering this, you start confiscating this,
right,
then you're going to confiscate all the guns.
Right.
But the point I was making is, you know, I don't care if people own handguns and shotguns and hunting rifles. That's not the issue. The issue is, is these guns that are clearly the choice, first choice of mass shooters. And you know, even if the additional registration and background checks, even if it prevents just one or two mass shootings, isn't it worth it?
Oh, listen, again, I'm in your corner regarding these AR-15s. I'm in your corner. All I'm saying is that it's not going to stop people who have this kind of, you know, this kind of design or evil intent. And you mentioning about, you know, mine hunters. Okay, let's go to the Texas Tower shooting. That goes back a number of years ago. That wasn't an AR-15. That was a
That was 50 years ago. I know that was 1966, 50 years ago this summer, in fact.
Yeah.
And, 52 years. I'm sorry, 52 years ago.
That's close enough.
But that was before we had these AR-15s that came out. I mean, you can buy them in Walmart, I think, in some places. I mean, it's too easy. Why make it easier? And obviously the choice, because if you like you say, you have the statistics of all these mass shootings. If you look at them in the last couple of years, majority of them were done with AR-15s.
Well, Jim, I won't disagree with you. I will tell you that I do agree with you on that note. The Hollywood shootout, in my opinion, was one of the things that prompted some of this also, because those gentlemen were using those automatic weapons like that, and even LAPD got caught short behind the use of those weapons. It seemed like after that, I'm not saying that was the catalyst at that time, but those guys had them. And they used them to try to commit the robbery. Now, those guys were criminals under those circumstances, and they had the design to, you know, to go in there and steal the money. And I think LAPD got caught short with all of that, as did a number of other agencies. But anyway, hey, Jim, listen, I really appreciate you calling in.
Thank you very much.
And, you know, and wrapping it up. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're doing a great job. Keep it up.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Okay. That was Jim from New Jersey giving us his opinions, and I think his opinions are valid. I don't disagree with his opinions, that's for sure. Okay, that wraps up the Second Amendment. Let's keep moving now. The next area that I'd like to talk to you about is about the cyber attacks in the work environment. You know, I did a blog. For those of you who are listening that read my blog, you know what I'm talking about. For those who are not familiar with my blog, every Monday I write a blog, and it has to do with the work environment. So if you go to www.pottsandassociates.com and you look up Listen Up with Jim Potts, you'll see my blog. I've been writing a blog now for, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, whatever it's been. Every Monday I put something new out there. This past Monday I did put some information out there regarding the work environment and this business about these cyber attacks, you know, because employers and companies, they have to protect themselves from their own employees, believe it or not. And, you know, these threat detection programs that are out there can range from systems that monitor data movement to specific monitoring of employee activity. So that's there. And as it turns out, statistically speaking, there's a lot of issues that's based on insider activity that employers probably don't think about. But this information out there, that 32% of data breaches occur because of insider activity. And people don't necessarily think about that. If you go back in time before cyber attacks, what were people doing when they left the work environment? Remember the days when we all had the Rolodex? We had the Rolodex information and the business cards. And people at that time, if they left a company, especially if they were in sales, they take the Rolodex or try to take the Rolodex. And, you know, if you look at it, that's a form of stealing information from the company as well. Now, one of the risks that employers are faced with has to do with departing employees who've had access to sensitive information have always been a concern for the business community. I can tell you that we get calls regarding clients that are always concerned about employees who are leaving, and what do? How do you shut them down? Well, first of all, you got to understand, if you know that the person is leaving, or that you're terminating the person, make sure that you are, you know, shut down that, you know, their passwords, et cetera, before they go. That's important. Now, you know, one of the things that always comes up is these clients that are talking to me about the fact that they gave an employee a laptop. Now, there's some employers that love giving laptops because the people will go home and they'll work from home. So here's the laptop. Go ahead and work from home. Now they've got all of that information that they're working on a laptop in their home. What's to stop them from downloading that information onto a flash drive and taking it? Employee turns around and gives 2 weeks notice and the employer wants their laptop back. Listen, if they gave 2 weeks notice, trust me when I tell you, they've already got the information. But the employer looks at it like, I'm going to get some extra work out of this person so they can work from home. They have this information. But hey, just keep in mind, you're not really safeguarding, you know, your information that way. Now, I will tell you, let's go through some of the, you know, essential security things that you need to be thinking about. Because I'm going to tell you, the biggest threat to your company's cybersecurity, it's not who you think it is. It's your employees. Cyber attacks target the weakest link, and more often than not, that weak link is your employees. Think about it. They have access to everything, and that's fine. We want to be able to trust them, but there's 10 issues that you should start thinking about with training your employees now to limit your company's cyber exposure, to limit the exposure. Let's go through those 10 things. One. Passwords are mandatory and must be strong. Employees generally resist having to enter a four-digit PIN code every time they turn on their iPhones. We get it. The iPhone's recent fingerprint scanner makes this process relatively frictionless. Now, your IT, legal, and risk management departments, however, should require them since they make it that much harder for someone to access data on a lost or stolen device. Now, if your organization deals with anything that has of a confidential nature, this requirement is that much more important to you. And most companies that have, I won't say most companies, companies that do have medical and medical information, HIPAA guidelines, HIPPA, you know, that's all confidential information that you want to make sure that you safeguard as an employer anyway. All right. So make sure those passwords are mandatory and make sure they are strong. Number two, manage email and attachments. Do your employees know not to open attachments or unknown sources? I can tell you in our organization, we are very, very strict on that. If it's unknown, don't do it. Because I can tell you even the best and most up-to-date security software will miss some viruses and malware. And your employees have got to understand not to open any attachments unless they can 100% verify the authenticity of the sender. It is just that simple. And let me tell you, there's people out there that are trying to steal your information. We'll get into that in a little bit, but they're trying to steal your information and then try to sell it back to you. Now, you got to fear phishing emails. Do your employees know how to recognize an attempted phishing attack? A cyber criminal impersonating a trustworthy source in order to steal credentials or place malware on your system? Hey, let me tell you, nearly 40% of all employees report opening a suspicious email. Look, here's the deal. When in doubt, throw it out. Right? Refrain. And you should drill this issue and this point into your employees' heads. It is costly. Some of you out there have probably been burned about this at one point. So you're probably a little bit more on top of it than some of the other employers and businesses. But just remember, it can be very costly. Number four, limit removable media and cloud storage. Removable and cloud storage limit your control over the portability of your data. If you need portable data, limit your employees to company-approved solutions that you can monitor and control. You stay in charge of it. Get those IT people in there doing their jobs. Make sure. Now, number five, avoid public and other unsecured Wi-Fi. An open Wi-Fi system is no different than an unlocked house. Just as you would not leave your house in the morning with the front door wide open, don't leave your network exposed by using open Wi-Fi networks. You know, we had a caller a few weeks ago, I believe her name was Chris. And she was even talking about what people are doing and how to safeguard their homes and their systems at their house. She was talking about hotels. I've stayed at a hotel. I was just in Miami this week, as I stated earlier. Hey, I never even turned my laptop computer on. See, we got to learn from this information. Never even turned it on. Did not want to be messing around with somebody. She mentioned about Starbucks, if you recall. And for those of you who didn't necessarily listen to that episode, if you go to episode 9, show number 9, that was an excellent episode on how to safeguard, you know, your home and your laptops when you're out and about in the general public. Okay, number 6, report lost or stolen devices immediately. IT must have the ability to remote wipe a missing mobile device. Guess what happens, though? If an employee's first call upon losing a phone is to their mobile carrier, that's what happens. The carrier turns off the device, and your organization loses the ability to remote wipe any data from it. Employees should be told that if they lose a mobile device, their first call should be to IT so the device can be wiped of any corporate data. And how often does an employee lose cell phones? Hey, listen, I've got employees that misplace cell phones. It happens. All right. And I got to tell you, the information that's stored on those is critical, can be critical information. I could tell you, like auto dealerships, as an example, they're calling customers. These guys have all that information in their phones. There could be a lot of data in there. So have your employees that if they lose their cell phone, their first call has got to be to give the employer possibly an opportunity to wipe that information out. All right. Okay. Number 7, limit apps and programs. Ban the installation of apps other than from the official iTunes App Store or Google Play. Google. Hey, did you see the news on the other day? They were talking about how Google is actually following people around. And the information, even when it's on, what is it called? When you're on the airplane, the plane mode or whatever that's called. Even when the phones are in the airplane mode, guess what? Google is still tracking you. That's a sidebar to what we're talking about right now, but was something I saw in the news this week. So that's amazing that they're actually able to do that. And they use that information and be able to sell the data that they get from that, tracking your movements. They could tell every place you've done, whether you're getting on a bus, getting off the bus, whether you're walking, jogging, whatever the case may be. That's amazing. But anyway, make sure with your employees, though, that you limit software installations to approved programs. And you know what? It probably would not hurt to gather up those phones from time to time and check to see what's on those phones. If those are company-owned phones, they're company owned. You have every right to be able to take a look at those phones. That is your company property. And that can risk, you know, limit the risk of installation of viruses, malware, and other malicious code on the devices themselves. And by the way, if you have any comments or questions, you know, I always like to throw the phone number out there to the listeners, 818-602-4929. All right. Number 8. Back up everything. In the event of a cyber attack that shuts down or kills your system, you need to have the ability to restore from ground zero. You cannot do this unless you routinely back up everything. In our office, we back up everything every night. We stay on top of that. The information is critical information out there for you guys. Then you need to be doing the same thing. Back that information up. All right. Next one. Think before you post. Social media has irrevocably blurred the line between public and private. Now, this does not mean that your employees need to share everything. In fact, the more they share, the easier it will become a fissure to gain trust and therefore access. But this thing about thinking before you post, hey, listen, this is a world of technology now. Once it's out there on the internet, it is out there. So you need to drill in the head. You need to create a policy. Basically, with some of the things that we're talking about right now, this is training. I get that you should be doing with your employees. But you should have a policy, a written stated policy that goes out to every employee based upon some of the things that we're talking about here and making sure that they sign on that policy and that policy copy goes into their personnel files. Okay, 10. Terminating employment means terminating access. Employees should be reminded that at the end of their employment, devices must be returned immediately, or if it's an employee's device, it will be wiped clean of all company information. Now, I'm going to tell you something. Data breaches are not an issue. It's not an if issue, I should say. It's a when issue. You will be breached. The only question is, when will it occur? And while you cannot prevent a data breach from occurring, you can and should train your employees to shore up any knowledge gaps that further opens the risk they inadvertently pose. Now, in all honesty, when it comes down to a termination, I don't know how cooperative some of these people are going to be with their personal phones and telling them, hand over your personal phone. We want to make sure that you don't have any company information on there. That's going to probably be tough. All right. Now, with a company phone, it's easy enough because they hand you the phone. But what happens when an employee turns around and says, well, I didn't bring my phone with me to work today for whatever reason, you know, that they may say? Well, here's the deal. If they forget to do that, some employers will say, you're not going to get your final check until you bring that phone back in or that company laptop back in, whatever the case may be. Just to let you know, in a lot of states, that's illegal, especially in California. I can tell you right now, you cannot do that. You can never hold up an employee's paycheck for turning back in company property. So you need to check the regulations in your particular state, but a lot of the states, you can't do it. So just to let you know that. So don't get out there saying Jim Potts told me it was okay to do that. I'm telling you right now, I'm telling you that you can't do it. All right. Now, let's take a moment and talk about the 7 tips on how to handle cyber sabotage and other insider cyber threats. All right. Now, I'm going to tell you, there's 3 types of people who fall into the insider category. Now, you heard me mention about the employees, but I'm going to tell you, there's negligent employees who don't practice good cyber hygiene. Second one is disgruntled employees with ill will and malicious employees who join organizations with the intent to defraud. Yeah, they actually have people out there who actually come to a company to get the information. Now, I mean, if you have a mom and pop shop, a little grocery store, things of that nature, I don't see your exposure being like that. But some of these other companies that deal with very sensitive information, banks, insurance companies, maybe other types of companies with securities, accounting firms. I mean, any of these, they could all be a target. Now, companies are increasingly building out cyber programs to protect themselves from their own employees. I'm telling you, it's out there. So, aside from the expense of costly monitoring these programs, let me tell you some issues that you should include to consider for an insider threat program. So, here's just 7 suggestions. And I kind of mentioned heightened monitoring of high-risk employees. So, heightened monitoring of high-risk employees, such as those who previously violated IT policies. Remember we talked about that policy? Everybody signs off on it. You find somebody that looks like that either they're getting ready to leave the company, you've had issues with them, that's considered a high-risk employee. The second tip is deterrence control, such as data loss prevention, data encryption, access management, endpoint security, mobile security, and cloud security. Get those deterrence controls working. Get your IT people going. Detection controls. This is one that employers overlook, such as intrusion detection and prevention, log management, security information, and event management. Get these controls in place so if those employees violate one of those policies we were talking about. Remember the first tip was just training for these people. Now this is giving you the tips on how to be able to come back and monitor these individuals to look for when there's a breach of the policy. Now, is what you also should be doing, which is 4, inventories and audits for computers, mobile devices, and removable media, which is, quite frankly, USB and external hard drives, during employment and post-employment. So it's what you need to do is put in a system. When we start thinking about audits, people don't think about audits in this area. But I kind of alluded to that a little while ago when I told you from time to time, bring those mobile phones in and check them. All right. 5. Kind of mentioned it, policies and programs to promote the resolution of employee grievances and protect whistleblowers. Whistleblowers are people that turn around and call a state agency, government agency, that the employer is in violation of some kind of law, and now the employer takes some kind of adverse action against them. That's what we call a whistleblower. Number six, well, here we go. Pre-employment background checks to help screen out potential problem employees before they become problems. Well, that's going to be a tough one, in my opinion, because some of the states now, California is one of them, are now getting into this situation where they're preventing employers from doing background checks totally. Initially, you have to kind of wait until after they've made the person a conditional offer of employment and then do the background check, which is okay. But I don't know when a person becomes a disgruntled employee. I mean, they may have started with all the best intentions in the world and everything was great and it was the honeymoon. But once the honeymoon was over, maybe they change. So I don't know what a background check is totally going to do in that area. And of course, I've already told you about the termination process that removes early access for terminated employees. So don't forget that one, you know. So look, I want to just end this segment and tell you to keep in mind that no company can make itself entirely bulletproof from a cyber attack. You can't. But it's what we're talking about doing here is at least reducing the opportunity. So maybe from a, you know, 90% opportunity now, maybe taking it down to a 20% opportunity, and hopefully that will help. So hopefully those tips will help you. You got to take it serious. These are the things that are going on, and there's people out there that will actually sell your information after they've stolen it. So you don't want to go down into that area. So start working on it with your IT people. Okay. Now, I want to talk to you in the remaining minutes we have here regarding these school shootings. Alicia sent in from Oregon, sent in a question regarding the school shootings. And Alicia, you know, you asked me how far back do these actually go. You will be shocked in terms of how far back they actually go. Let me just tell you something. Listeners, believe it or not, the actual first school shooting, November 12th, 1840. Now, before I get into talking to you about that one, because I want to make sure that I cover some statistics I want you to know also, Alicia, I'm going to tell you something. Believe it or not, since 1840, there have been, you ready for this number? 575 school shootings. 575. I already told you 1840 was the first one. Now listen, there's some more statistics here that I kind of correlated here. Before Columbine, there were 249 school shootings before Columbine. 249. You guys have heard me say before about domestic terrorism. This stuff is just simply not new. 575 total, 249 before Columbine. You want to know how many now? Since Columbine, 225. That is shocking. But what I wanted you to also understand, let's look at the school shootings in 2015. There were 21. 2016, there were 15. 2017, there were only 9. Now, those are full years that I'm giving you with those. You want to know how many so far in 2018? Hold on to yourself. 28. 28 school shootings already in 2018. This is shocking. Now, I get it. We're concerned, and the politicians are talking about trying to do something. I saw the other day one school out in the Midwest someplace was talking about these buckets they were going to have, where they're going to have these big 5-gallon buckets, and in the 5-pound bucket there's going to be a hammer to break out a window in case something happens. They have these wooden wedges that they can wedge underneath the door, and then they had some rope in there so if necessary after they break out that window, they can climb out. You know, look, anything that you can do is definitely going to be helpful, no doubt about it. But I want to go back to 1840. And as you know, if you've heard some of my other shows, you know I have a lot of information. It's one of the points I was making to our caller from New Jersey earlier. I think his name was Jim. I talked about the fact that with so many shootings and how far they go back. So, yes, There have been a lot of them. We go back in time. The school shooting, I just want to give you, because I like that. I was a history major in college, so I like this historical stuff anyway. But I will tell you that one, because I'm sure you're curious. You know, school shooting 1840, what was that about? Well, here's what it was. They had the University of Virginia had an annual protest. And the way that they did it, they were rioting and protesting the right to carry firearms on campus. Jim, if you're still listening out there, here we go. Second Amendment, the right to carry firearms on campus is what these students. Every year, these students had this annual event where they, in fact, just rioted, protested because they wanted to be able to carry weapons on campus. And obviously, it was a violation for them to do that. So the university told them, no, that they couldn't do that. And the University of Virginia, for those of you who don't know, was founded by Thomas Jefferson. So it was an annual event. And they were out there raising hell, burning tar barrels, and shooting pistols in the air. And they wore masks to hide their identity because they didn't want the repercussions, because this event was looked upon, you know, very negatively by the administration. Now, John Anthony Gardner Davis was a law professor at that university. He was in his home. He came out of his house to help quell the rioting. And he approached one of the masked students. His name was Joseph Semmes, S-E-M-M-E-S. He tried to remove his mask. And obviously, Semmes didn't want his mask removed because somebody would know who he was and he'd probably face some kind of expulsion from school. So the student ran a few steps, but then he stopped and he turned and he shot Davis in the stomach. Davis was a popular professor and the students were stunned that this had happened. So the students were very upset about it, and they even helped the authorities hunt Semmes down. They actually found him in a pine grove the next day or so. When he gets caught, he just laughed and joked about what happened. He didn't take it very seriously. And believe it or not, after his actions, guess what? He was released on bail. They let him out of jail. And guess what happened? No surprise. He disappeared. Gone. They didn't know where he went. Now, the shooting was in 1840, I told you, just to refresh your memory. For 7 years, he was basically on the run. And then, 1947, he committed suicide. And he left a note that he had taken his own life. For 7 years, he was on the run. And that's what happened to Joseph Semmes, the first school shooter. Now, that was in 1840. The next one was in 1853. A student, Matthew Flournoy Ward, he took a pistol to school where he shot his schoolmaster, H.G. Butler, for revenge for what Ward thought was excessive punishment of his brother the day before. So because this schoolmaster punished his brother, he turned around and shot and killed him. The schoolmaster died, and guess what? Ward was acquitted. He got off. What year are we talking about? 1853? It was in Louisville, Kentucky. There's your second school shooting. Then, I'll just give you this third one before we wrap this up. August 1956, 3 years later, this was in Alabama. The schoolmaster had a tame sparrow and warned the students not to harm it, threatening death. One of the boys stepped on the bird and killed it. He was afraid to return to school, but did so. After the teachings that day, the master took the boy into a private room and strangled him to death. The boy's father went to the school and shot the schoolmaster dead. At any rate, we're talking about, you know, 1856, 1853, 1840. But I wanted to share those with you. Those were the first three school shootings. All right, you've been listening to Jim Potts at LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show. But let me remind you, you can follow me on Twitter. I put things out there when little things happen. Twitter.com/Jim Potts Author. So be sure to join me next week for another exciting week of topics, statistical information, and all of those things that keep my listeners coming back. I appreciate your time and enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Take care. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.